COVID-19 and the state of lockdown. Now, anger could be the loss of a loved one, or an artist, or an athlete, or, you know.
Anger, are you sure? Isn't that sadness or sorrow?
Also sadness, but on the other hand, you're like, oh, but he was so young, but he was so good, but he was so healthy, and this Ronas came and ruined everything.
I'm pretty sure that's still sorrow.
Really?
Isn't it? Because frustration is what you see in where? Netherlands? People are coming out with riots and stuff like that. Other countries also have done that, apparently.
Yeah, but why are they coming out in riots?
They're angry. That's called anger. Because they're kept down in their houses and, you know, lockdowns.
Why would they have to come out in riots? Who are they rioting against? A virus?
The people who are actually keeping them at home, not allowing them to go wherever they want. Openly,
so are those freely? People not doing it for the people's own good? Like, if it's the government that's mandating a law that y'all should stay home so you don't go out and spread the Ronas, isn't that for your own good, though?
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So why riot?
It's a bit selfish, isn't it?
Okay, I understand that they're... I mean, you know, I would say if I were the people suffering from a lockdown... Mind you, lockdown happens, like... almost a year ago, right? And then
where
the pandemic happened almost a year ago. Yeah. So wherever it was that I was when the pandemic first started, we went into lockdown, and 2 weeks into quarantine, I was like, what's everyone fussing about? I don't feel a change at all. This is what I always do.
Do you know what I think? If everyone actually did take care of the social distancing and all the other things that you're supposed to, standard SOPs, you know, we wouldn't need such a lockdown, would we?
Really? I mean, the population of California alone is over 40 mil.
Yeah, so?
And it's a limited piece of ground. How much can they possibly socially distance themselves?
What about masks?
Okay, yeah, masks can. Yeah. If I... See...
Peas includes everything?
If people were more adamant on... wearing a mask and sanitizing their hands, one would think, well, how could the virus possibly transmit and transfer, right? It would lessen. So here's the question. Are people angry and frustrated with the Ronas? Are they angry and frustrated at the government who's locking them down?
More importantly, what's the way out, yeah?
Or are they just angry and frustrated in general? I'd go with the latter. And I don't think there's a solution. Because how is the government supposed to know? It's not like it's faced a pandemic before since World War II, post-World War, right? How is it supposed to know what to do in a state of global viral emergency?
Well, you could do what China did.
Which was?
Lockdown. Severe lockdowns. And they provided everyone with the necessary things that they needed. And they asked them to stay at home no matter what. And it was very effective.
A lot of other countries did that. A lot of Southeast Asian countries do that.
Provided them with everything free of cost at their...
But like a really strict lockdown, like Thailand, Malaysia...
Doesn't that draw pressure on a person as an individual, you know?
To what?
For you, for example, you're all right with the lockdown and the quarantine and everything. But someone who's a very outgoing person, who, you know, what do you call it, an extrovert? Yeah, so for those people, it's... detrimental, isn't it, for them?
It really is.
Yeah. How do they deal with it? What do you think?
They don't deal with it.
How should they deal with it?
I had a friend. She was extremely outgoing. Okay, I have a very weird circle of friends because I'm not extremely outgoing at all. Anyway, and lockdown happened, and like fast forward a month, they slipped into depression, right? Because they couldn't function.
Was it because of what they were going through, or the things that they saw around themselves going on?
No, because they couldn't function in the confinement of the walls of their home, you know? They were used to traveling and going out and doing sports and engaging with people and eating out every other night.
Where are they right now, mentally?
Where are they right now? I think they've slowly but surely coped. Mm-hmm. And I think religious and spirituality plays a huge role.
So they were religious?
Yeah, totally. Of course, hello. I know, it's not like me to have good, pious religious friends.
No, it's not actually normal to have a set of friends and that's it, you know? What I mean is, they got over it. for themselves, right?
Didn't get over it at all. They coped with it. They're still trying to figure out how to navigate their way around, you know, the state of things. And they compromise, I think, here and there. But I've really believed that spirituality and religion played a huge role in grounding them, you know?
So you think that whatever goes on, for example, I'm emotionally connected to people, and I see them dying. Many people die every day. It was low down now, but at its peak, it was thousands, right?
Yeah.
So you're saying that that's the way to deal with it, and that's the only sole way to deal with it.
Is there, by dealing with it, do you mean preventing those deaths?
No, is it even possible? No, it's not.
It's not. So dealing with, yes, I really do believe that religion is the only way to deal with it. You know, if it's taken out of context, it could be very inconsiderate. But at the end of the day, we have to believe that we're all bound for the grave. Inna lillahi wa inna ilayhi raji'un. We are from God, and to God we will return. Right? So one day it's the pandemic, one day it's a car accident, one day it's like the other day, my baby brother, he texted me and he was distraught and he was like, my friend, he was 25, he was my college friend. I found out yesterday he died of a heart attack.
25.
That's insane, yeah, right? It is, yeah. And he was raised by a single mom. Exactly. And he passed away. And just saying it now makes my heart feel weird because I'm just thinking about that mom.
Yeah.
She probably washes her son's mask every day and puts sanitizer in his backpack, you know, to make sure that. And then out of nowhere, bam, a heart attack.
Yeah, least expected.
Exactly. Yeah. 25. It's like the prime of his health and youth. Mm-hmm. Who would have thought? So my point is, we're all going to die at the end of the day, bro. But right. if we settle with that as the truest truth, like Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam has said, and if we embrace it, and if we just keep reminding ourselves, if we live life the Islamic way that tells us not to cower away from death, tells us to embrace death, tells us that it's the truest truth, tells us that it's going to find us no matter where we are. We're going to be careful in a state of pandemic, but we're still going to be like, alhamdulillah ala kulli hal. If it's my father, if it's my neighbor's father, if it's my colleague's father, if it's, you know, a stranger's father. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I sort of do.
But
isn't it natural for someone to suffer mentally, you know?
Of course.
Yeah, so
I'm not saying someone dies and, you know, you just go sip your chai.
Right. So one point, how many Muslims do we have in the world? 1.7 billion, right? What about the people who are not Muslims, right? What do they do? There are people who are not Muslims, not religious, but they've coped well with the pandemic, right?
Yeah.
What do you think they did?
I think, again, they embraced life for more than...
So if I conclude correctly...
More than what it is, yeah.
What you're saying is by religion, you mean accepting the truth. Right.
Yeah, sure.
No, because these people are not religious at all. For example, they might be atheists for all we know. But
they're still spiritual, quote unquote.
Yeah, there's this thing that's going on recently, right? Agnostics.
And I don't necessarily I think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, right. That's what I'm saying. We're going to go off the topic if we get into
it. How are you coping with the pandemic, if coping at all?
Great. Great.
Guys, you should see the level of sarcasm on his face. His left eye was twitching. It had a sudden nervous spasm when he said great.
It's the most beautiful thing that happened to me. Anyway.
You're a horrible liar. You have a baby, right?
Yeah.
How old is she, if I may ask?
A little younger than 2 years old.
How's she coping with the pandemic?
She has no idea what's going on.
Really? Does she not want to go out?
Yes, she does. She goes out to the yard and stuff like that, plays around, but she doesn't realize that there's a world outside the yard.
Okay, all right, makes sense.
It should be easy.
Are you going crazy? No, because
I was wearing the mask and stuff like that. I was doing the things that I was usually doing, so it wasn't much of a difference.
Okay.
Yeah, and when it comes to lessons and stuff like that, that was the best thing that could happen, you know.
Online classes.
Yeah.
Right.
So in that sense, perfect for me.
Is your wife coping okay?
Initially, it was a bit tough for her. Definitely. But then we decided that, you know, she should just join me on the wagon and just go on, you know. So she started going out with to her friends and stuff like that, wearing a mask, and you know. So yeah, she pretty much got used to it. I was talking about people accepting that this is the truth, is it?
Yeah, this is the truth.
Right. So as a person who does not believe in an afterlife,
yeah,
the least he could do or they could do is that they submit, right, to the truth. Being worried or being harsh on ourselves is not going to change the fact that, you know, we are headed towards that very thing that we're sad about.
Thank you so very much for being with us on this episode of Youth Station. Until another greeting, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
I am what I am because you made. I have what I have. My love is strong because you are the one I call creator. My Alpha and Omega, my protector and my maker. Because of you, in weakness I am braver. My defender and my savior, my giver and my taker. Abiding in silence with patience and guidance. Aware when I need you, the light when I seek you. Justice, forgiveness, the strength in my weakness. And my love is strong.
The latest annual student data report from the Social Science Research Group, Jain Family Institute, published recently, belies claims by President Joe Biden, who said he would not cancel $50,000 in federal student loan debt per borrower, that such a move would disproportionately benefit people who attend elite private universities. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Brett Wilkins Ryder. This article is published under the heading, New Economic Study Demolishes Myth About Student Debt Parroted by Joe Biden. Stay tuned for the details, please. The latest annual student debt report from the social science research group Jain Family Institute, published recently, belies claims by President Joe Biden, who said he would not cancel $50,000 in federal student loan debt per borrower, that such a move would disproportionately benefit people who attend elite private universities. The 2021 Student Debt and Young America report, authored by JFI's Laura Beamer and Edward Nielage, begins by noting that young people are overrun with student debt. This crisis is the culmination of waning government funding for higher education, wage stagnation, wealth inequality, and a misleading emphasis on obtaining high credentials, all leading to the financial gap between college prices and later earnings, they wrote. In 2020, aggregate balances reached $1.66 trillion in 2019 dollars, 122% higher in real dollars than in 2010. The authors continue. Not surprisingly, the number of borrowers, the amount they owe, and the number of loans each borrower acquires have all increased over the time period. In 2019, 18 to 35-year-olds with a student loan debt owed nearly $35,000 on average compared to just over $28,000 in 2009. Back in 2009, there were only 32 million federal borrowers. In 2019, that number swelled to 43 million. The recent study notes marked racial disparities in student debt, with black people suffering both the largest increase over time and the highest median amount owed in 2019, at $20,236. Asian students experienced the worst debt inequality in 2019, although their median debt was $18,548 that year. Their average debt balance was $38,860. Critically, this study finds, because low and lower middle income communities see the worst debt to income ratios, they would see the largest portion of their income freed up throughout student debt forgiveness. Young adult borrowers in low and lower middle income communities would receive an outsized share of forgiveness in aggregate dollars compared to middle and upper income communities. This flies in the face of the implications of Biden's remarks at a CNN town hall in Milwaukee, where the president said he doesn't want to forgive billions of dollars of debt for people who have gone to Harvard and Yale and Penn, instead of using that money to provide money for early education for young children who come from disadvantaged circumstances. Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, an outspoken proponent of student debt forgiveness, rebutted Biden's assertion by asking, "Who cares what school someone went to? Entire generations of working-class kids were encouraged to go into more debt under the guise of elitism. This is wrong," Ocasio-Cortez tweeted late recently. "The case against student loan forgiveness is looking shakier by the day. We can and should do it. Keep pushing." Speaking of freshly published JFI study, Beamer recently tweeted that she was waiting until this report came out to address the ridiculous Harvard, Yale, and Penn comment from Biden, calling it a myth that borrowers attending elite schools would overwhelmingly benefit from forgiveness compared to their peers elsewhere. Other progressive politicians and advocates also pushed back on Biden's remarks. Representative Ayanna Pressley affirmed that the president could cancel student debt with the stroke of a pen. Americans for Financial Reform, which has led demands for Biden to cancel $50,000 of student debt per borrower through executive action, recently decried Biden's proposed $10,000 per person debt relief as inadequate. "Far more than $10,000 in cancellation is required," the group said, "to provide aid that 44 million families and the economy need."
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Myanmar has been the scene of mass demonstrations against junta leaders ever since the February 1 coup. Anti-coup protesters have defied a crackdown by the military, taking to the streets in several cities across the country almost daily. Demonstrators are demanding the release of the country's de facto leader, Aung San Suu Kyi, who was detained along with a number of parliament members. They're also demanding the restoration of civilian rule. Myanmar's junta has ratcheted up security measures to quell anti-coup demonstrations, and the internet in Yangon has been down for several days. Junta leaders deny they staged a coup and justified their power seizure by alleging widespread voter fraud in November elections that Suu Kyi's party won. They also pledged to hold new elections soon. This, however, has failed to calm down the situation.
I guess a lot of times with the Burma army and the Burmese dictators, they are always above the law. So why he doesn't calm the situation is because he doesn't want to calm the situation, because he wants things to be under his control, and he wanted to hold on to the power the way he wants to run the country. And that is why although you will see a lot of chaotic going on, and you would think that if he is sincere about, if he's talking about the election issues and election is fraud, if that is the case, then why violence?
The army generals have filed multiple charges against the deposed leader, including ignoring an import and export law over walkie-talkies that were found in her home during a search. The Nobel laureate's lawyer says she has also been hit with a second charge, which is violating the country's disaster management law. Observers believe the accusations against Suu Kyi are an indication that the military is seeking a permanent grip on power.
Nobody knows how long the military is going to hold on to the power, but it is very worrisome that they probably may not want to let go the power because for so many reasons, especially those who are in power, like high-ranking position like Mae Aung-le. He has so much political ambition in order to become the president, and even more so in order to control and have control over his own economic ambitions.
The military seizure of power has drawn global reactions. The United Nations has warned the army of several consequences of any harsh response to protesters. The UN Special Rapporteur said Myanmar's generals will be held accountable for any suppression of the civil disobedience campaign there. The coup also drew reactions from other international players. China said the situation in Myanmar is not what Beijing wants to see. It also rejected social media rumors that China was involved in the coup as complete nonsense. However, China, along with Russia, says the coup is Myanmar's internal affairs. The United States, however, has taken a different stance. Last Wednesday, U.S. President Joe Biden announced new sanctions on those responsible for the coup and any entities linked to junta leaders. Biden said Washington will be ready to impose additional measures. There is also the risk of a new confrontation between U.S. and China, maybe over Myanmar.
I mean, look, yes, the U.S. is talking about threatening to impose sanctions, targeted sanctions especially. And what did they do in the past week? They did impose some targeted sanctions, but it's just on what, on the gems companies? But the most important thing to follow, to go behind, is the oil and gas company that is owned by the military. That is where they make a whole bunch of money in order to buy their submarines, their warplanes, all kinds of sophisticated weapons, which we call Mag and Mel, the oil company. They didn't do anything about it. That is something we wanted to see the U.S. will sanction.
The two nuclear-armed countries are already facing off on a range of other issues, including the U.S. interference in China's periphery, such as the South China Sea and the Korean Peninsula, as well as the trade and cyber wars between them. Myanmar is just another geopolitical war threat for China and the U.S., but observers believe Beijing has an edge over Washington in this struggle.
Saudi Arabia could not have it any better. As soon as the former U.S. President Donald Trump came into office, it was evident that he intended to solidify the relationship with Saudi Arabia even more than before. And the businessman that Trump was, that translated into weapon sales to Saudi Arabia.
$533 million.
The Saudis were more than happy to comply. Through their weapons purchases, they also bought the loyalty of the U.S. presidents when it came to their wrongdoings, like their human rights violations, and of course, the Saudi war in Yemen, and the grave violations that were taking place there. The U.S. president even shielded the Crown Prince from the brutal murder assassination of Jamal Khashoggi, which the world condemned as a heinous crime. That included the current U.S. President Joe Biden, an act which may have been the straw that broke the camel's back when it came to Saudi Arabia and the Crown Prince. This may explain why Joe Biden has announced that King Salman is whom he would communicate with in Saudi Arabia, and not bin Salman, even though bin Salman is in fact the de facto leader of Saudi Arabia.
And on Saudi Arabia, I would say, you know, we've made clear from the beginning that we're going to recalibrate our relationship with Saudi Arabia. And that, you know, President Biden, on one of the questions there was also, just to go back to the context of it, whether he would be speaking with MBS. And part of that is going back to engagement counterpart to counterpart. The president's counterpart is King Salman. And I expect at an appropriate time, he would have a conversation with him. I don't have a prediction of the timeline on that.
I think that the significance of this snub of Biden's statement is the suggestion that by the White House or Biden will not consider Saudi Arabia as synonymous with Mohammed bin Salman, but rather seek to establish a relationship with Saudi Arabia that does not uniquely or exclusively depend on Mohammed bin Salman. And of course, that can carry many meanings. At the moment, it just seems to be a statement of significance in expressing the intentions of the Biden administration to rein in Mohammed bin Salman.
The Saudi Crown Prince, however, was forewarned of Biden's stance towards him. Biden used pretty tough language specifically against Mohammed bin Salman during his campaign trail, calling him a pariah. Tough language that the Saudis were not used to hearing. Even though the U.S. President Joe Biden claims that human rights is a barometer when it comes to Saudi Arabia, then why would it sell weapons to other countries, like in the case of Egypt, in which President Sisi is known for rights abuses in that country? The U.S. president has plans for West Asia, or the Middle East region, that goes beyond Saudi Arabia and Israel. The region's security is still very much a concern for the U.S., but regional dynamics and equations may be changing. First off, ending the U.S. support for Saudi Arabia's war on Yemen.
This war has to end. And to underscore our commitment, we are ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales.
If the U.S. wants to establish regional security, it will need the Islamic Republic of Iran. The U.S. realizes the military power that Iran possesses, and without this power, the region will be in flux due to tensions between Iran and Saudi Arabia and Israel and with the resistance groups in the region. In order for this to be solved, the U.S. realizes that it has no choice other than to rejoin the JCPOA. This can decrease tensions significantly, even though both Saudi Arabia and Israel are not enthusiastic about this, nor do they support it. Iran is also looking for regional stability, but without U.S. presence in the region. This comes in the form of Iranian President Hassan Rouhani's vision for peace called the Hormuz Peace Initiative, or the Hormuz Peace Plan. In order to establish security in the region, including the Persian Gulf, the Strait of Hormuz, and the Sea of Oman. This will involve regional countries.
The message coming from Biden is that while we are not lifting sanctions, we are offering concessions in other places, in other issues. And I think for Iran in particular, it's a matter of to what extent can we trust the U.S. to lift the sanctions if we do eventually come to a deal.
But why would the U.S. be after this approach to West Asia? The Pentagon, at Biden's direction, has undertaken a review of changes that need to be made to U.S. military deployments worldwide with an eye towards countering the growing threat from China. West Asia is no longer a number one priority for the U.S. It remains to be seen, however, if the U.S. lifts Iran's sanctions in order for this plan to bear fruit and for Iran to return to the JCPOA. The U.S. President Joe Biden's approach towards Saudi Arabia changing, however, is just a mirage, since Saudi Arabia has continued bombing Yemen and throughout all the previous U.S. administrations, and despite U.S. promises made, the U.S. support has not changed, neither for Saudi Arabia nor for Israel.
The Israeli military has once again carried out a number of missile attacks from the occupied Syrian Golan Heights, targeting several army positions near the capital, Damascus. The Syrian media have confirmed the attacks, saying Israeli jets flew over the Golan Heights to hit targets on the edge of Damascus. They also said the country's air defense intercepted and shut down most of the missiles fired toward Damascus. But this is not the first time the regime attacks Syria. Israel has done hundreds of air and missile strikes on government troops and their allies there. Some believe the attacks are aimed at undermining the country's military capabilities.
this has been the focus for the last few years. Israel's focus especially has been towards Syria's air defense systems. I don't think they have been successful, however, because clearly Syrian air defense systems are working well and better than they did at the start of the war. Most of Israel's missiles have been shot down.
The Israeli attacks against Syria have been going on ever since the country was gripped by foreign-backed militancy in March 2011. The Syrian government forces have already clawed back much of the territory it lost to terrorist groups in the first couple of years of the Syrian conflict. Syrian troops are now engaged in a few mopping-up operations to clear the country from the remnants of Takfiri terror groups. The Syrian government says the Israeli regime and its Western and regional allies are aiding Takfiris that reduced large swathes of Syria to rubble.
Well, the U.S. is continuing their four-decade, you know, tradition of supporting terrorism in the region. They continue to fund the White Helmets, which, as we know, is al-Qaeda with white hats on. In Idlib province, they continue to try to extend the conflict in the northwest of Syria, where Al Qaeda has taken over the entirety of Idlib province, and they admit that Al Qaeda is the biggest force in that region, and they want to maintain or continue that war for as long as possible by supporting Al Qaeda.
Monday's attack on Syria comes as senior Israeli military officials have previously said that escalating attacks inside the Arab country are aimed at ending Iran's military presence there. This is while Iran says its military presence in Syria is upon a request from the Damascus government, adding that Tehran has not received any message demanding it leave Syria.
Of course, the Syrian government invited Iran to support Syria against the terrorist and Zionist attack. Syria and Iran have been allies for decades. And of course, this is also in Iran's interest because those terrorists will eventually try to attack within Iran. And of course, the whole point of the war is to, why the US caused the war in the first place is for Israel's sake. And that is to try to create a new government in Syria that would not be allied to Iran. They're trying to break up the Syrian-Iranian alliance.
Damascus has sent many letters of protest to the UN to demand a world body end the Israeli aggression. So far, to no avail.
Well, Israel continuously is breaking international law by breaching Syrian sovereignty. And we also know that they have done this for decades in Palestine, and the United Nations hasn't been able to do anything about it. They are now trying to take Israel to the International Criminal Court, and this is something that's been resisted by the US and even Germany. So the problem with the United Nations is that at the end of the day, who controls what happens? It's the country that has the power, that has nuclear weapons. And therefore, the UN is a bit of a joke, because even if they were to condemn Israel for its crimes, which even that they're not able to do, they wouldn't be able to physically do anything to bring Israel to justice.
Many construe the West's silence towards continued Israeli attacks on Syria as tactical support for the aggression. They also attribute the escalation in the attacks to Israel's anger over the victory of Syria and the axis of resistance in the face of the years-long militancy against the government of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. The militancy is widely seen as a foreign-backed plot to bring about regime change in Syria and partition it into weak states in favor of Israel's geostrategic interests. The militancy failed. Now Syria is nearly in full control of its territory and is on track towards stability.
Bahrainis have taken to the streets across the tiny Persian Gulf kingdom to mark the 10th anniversary of a popular uprising against the ruling monarchy.
The rallies took place on Saturday night on the eve of the 2011 uprising's anniversary, with the participants chanting slogans against the Al-Khalifa regime and King Hamad bin Isa Al-Khalifa. The protests were held in several towns and villages near the capital Manama. People called for an end to human rights violations and the release of political prisoners. The demonstrators carried pictures of the uprising's leaders and martyrs, as well as placards vowing resistance until victory.
They have waited for almost 100 years of struggle, 100 years of struggle since 1922 until now, and they put forward their demands clearly. They do not want this dictatorship. Now, of course, the situation has become even worse because the Khalifa dictators have become even more anti-people, against the people, with harsh policies. But also, they have gone as far as the Arab and Muslim cause of Palestine, and they have normalized their relationship with the Israelis. The people are simply very angry. They just do not like that. They think this is betrayal, this is treachery.
They also blocked the streets by setting up bonfires despite heavy security and the presence of policemen. The protesters held handwritten posters with messages of solidarity with the families of the martyrs and condemnation of the regime's repression. Additionally, the Coalition Youth of the 14th February Revolution, in a statement, called on all Bahraini groups and masses to close ranks in order to change the ruling political regime in Manama. The Manama regime is pressing ahead with its heavy-handed crackdown and persecution of human rights campaigners and political dissidents, despite condemnations by the international community. Furthermore, the Al-Khalifa regime has begun trying civilians at military tribunals since 2017, a move that has drawn widespread condemnation from human rights bodies and activists and has been described as the imposition of an undeclared martial law across the country. The heavy-handed response saw scores of people dead, thousands arrested, and many tortured in custody over years. The unprecedented suppression drew international outcries. Emboldened by foreign support, the Manama regime dissolved the main opposition party Al-Wefaq in 2016 and put its leaders behind bars. Experts believe the ruling regime in Bahrain is committing such acts with impunity as it enjoys support from Saudi Arabia.
We also know that the Khalifis are receiving orders from the Saudis, from the Emiratis, and this is another problem. They have sold out the sovereignty of the country. We are not a sovereign state. We do not have our own political decisions. We have to follow them. The Emirates and the Saudis say, we want to go and have relations with Israel. Yes, we have to. It is not a matter of discussion and debate. It is a matter of imposition and a matter of following, accepting whatever is being imposed from the outside.
But as Bahrain's most prominent Shia cleric, Sheikh Isa Ghassem, noted, the actions of the Al-Khalifa regime and the unwavering support of the Saudi military cannot undermine the determination of the Bahraini people, as the reactionary and cruel rule of the Bahraini regime is incompatible with the will of the people.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
Questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Answering your doubts and questions, and questions and answers on Islamic beliefs.
الله هو ذا الرحمن الله هو ذا المنان لا إله إلا.
Please send us your emails through our email, which is englishradio@irib.ir.
In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome once again to another program of Questions and Answers on the Islamic Belief. I'm your host, Sayyid Wahid Alawi, And I'm here with Sayyid Muhsin Naqawi. Assalamu alaikum, Sayyid.
Alaykum assalam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for having me.
We were talking about freedom of speech, and we try to find the main problem and the central problem of this issue between the Muslim nation and the Western Hemisphere with its liberal democracy and the ideology of modernism. And we reached the conclusion that there is something called holy, and in the eyes of today's very secular, atheistic, materialistic people of the West, not talking about those devout Christians, because they also have holiness within their religion, but I'm talking about those who do not commit to any religion, they do not have anything called holy. But in real fact, as Sayyid, you mentioned in the previous program, they also have something called holy, but they don't mention the name or the word holy. And they have their own red lines that you should not pass or stamp on, otherwise there will be retaliations. But talking about how to fix the issue, how can we fix it? Now, we have different views, you and I, we have different views. How can we fix it? Where can we meet? Where is the meeting point between us and our view and the Christians of the West and the Jews of the West, together with secular, materialistic, humanistic people?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Well, obviously, when we talk about the unity, unity always happens where there is a dispute. Because when there is no dispute, there's no point to get united on.
Right.
There are some aspects in which I differ from you, you differ from me. There's right. differences, but there are some commonalities, the common things. The unity is always on the common things. Number one, when you have some red lines in your viewpoint,
right,
and you do not allow others to talk about those red lines, then when you're talking about someone, if they have some red lines, you need to obviously consider those red lines as well.
Right.
Muslim community is not a small number in the world. We have a big number of
1.5 billion.
We have a big number of Muslims living in the world. And when you insult Muslims, you're basically insulting the whole 1.5 billion, the way you said, or the whole Muslim community who's living in the world, whether they're living in America or England or Europe or Asia, Canada, Australia, no matter where they live. So you're insulting this big number. And when you insult all of them, there is a retaliation. You might see that retaliation maybe in Europe. You might see that in France. You might see that, for example, any part of the world. So there is a retaliation. So you need to be careful about this, number one. Now, when we talk about the red lines, obviously there must be some red lines. For example, for the Muslims, the Book of Allah and the Prophets of Allah are the red lines. We respect Jesus, alayhi salam, being a prophet. We respect Moses, alayhi salam. He was the prophet. So we believe on all these prophets. So you should not insult a prophet at all.
Right.
Because he is someone who's been sent by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we have clear evidences in the Quran. Book of Allah. We believe in the Torah, in Injil, so-called Bible that they have. Obviously, this is not the actual Injil that was at that time. There's many changes in that. But there are four books, including Quran. These are some red lines, obviously. Yes, in today's world, there are some people who tries to insult, for example, the supreme leader of Iran, for example. Yes, they do that because he is the leader. You have difference of opinion.
They're not allowed to do that.
They do that. And
they
he himself
shouldn't be allowed.
He himself can defend himself. He himself can defend himself. He himself can answer that.
Right.
Okay, for example, we had like...
But I think that there should be repercussions and retaliations for insulting.
Yes, there was, for
but
example...
But not if it's a constructive criticism.
But he himself came and he gave a speech. He said, they're doing with me. So I will deal with them. Don't worry about this. Don't waste your time or energy into these things. These things are there to stop you from what you're doing. So this was his answer. So you see the difference, the way, like we said in one of the programs, that if the Prophet was there by himself, he can defend himself. He can show you the way where to go. But because he's not there, then obviously everyone have its own reaction
right.
on a specific issue.
Questions and Answers on Islamic Beliefs on IRIB English Radio. You can send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Inshallah, 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 you'll find your way.
So first thing is to get united, obviously. First thing we need to remember, when we're talking about the freedom of speech, the way West have their red lines, everyone has their own red lines. So you need to believe on this. This cannot be done, like the unity cannot be made, or we cannot get together if you, when you, it comes to you, you have your red lines, you do not allow others to talk about them. But when it comes on the others, for example, Muslims or any other nation, you are free to talk about anything in regards to them. This cannot be happened. There must be a principle, and we need to follow that principle. The main problem right. in today's world is that we are not following the principles when it goes to others. When it's about me, yes, I apply all the principles. I'm following all the rules. But whenever it's about others...
So there is a hypocrisy.
Yes, it is
definitely. But where is the meeting point?
It is.
Where can we meet?
Obviously, there are interfaith conferences that are happening.
Right.
And these interfaith conferences should be
made. But what if the person is not a religious person? He's a materialist.
That's the point. We need to make these interfaith conferences public.
Mm.
These are in the conferences amongst the scholars. Yes, the people should also know about this. Because people are not aware of these things, that's why whatever is being injected to them, they're believing on that. A person who is material... who's materialistic, he does not believe on anything, for example, an atheist, obviously, he should come on the grounds of ethics. We can unite with him in the basis. Obviously, he also believes. He has beliefs as well. We cannot say like he does not have a religion. He has a religion that there is no God. He
right.
believes on these things. He has his own beliefs. He's following himself. That's what we can say about him. But obviously, there are some ethical grounds. We need to follow ethics. You know, insulting, abusing are not the way
no.
to talk, to deal with the
right.
people. They are the ethics, common ethics.
Right.
How this person, when he's living in a community, he's living with the Muslim, non-Muslim, for example, Christian, Jews, Hindu, Sikhs, who are living in his
right.
neighbor. He's a very peaceful person. But when he comes to talk about something, he becomes... For example,
right, let me give you another example, Sayed, about Facebook and Twitter
mm-hmm.
and Instagram maybe. Why are they taking down the posters and the comments about Shahid Soleiman? You know, the general who was assassinated by a drone by the terrorist regime of US.
Yes. Obviously, we know that the Facebook and tweet are...
Where is the freedom of speech here?
Well, obviously, these are the social, you can say, media servers that are operated by these terrorist regime, obviously.
Right.
And when they're running their own servers, you cannot put a data which is against them. For example, Qasem Soleimani, who has saved humanity, who gave his life to save
sacrificed
humanity,
everything.
Who sacrificed himself for this cause... Obviously, in the eyes of the...
The main actor to diminishing...
ISIS.
Daesh, oh, ISIS.
ISIS.
Yeah.
The so-called terrorist regime like US, they said, like, we are diminishing
ISIS. Not so-called.
ISIS.
They are.
The so-called superpower, yes.
All right.
They are. Yes. And obviously, they were the ones who used to claim that they are eliminating the ISIS, but actually it was Qasem Soleimani. who eliminated Al-Qaeda and, for example, the ISIS from the Syria and
region,
Iraq, the region. Obviously, and this kind of people, obviously, they are their enemies because they have, we can say, disclosed or they have made apparent what they were hiding.
Right.
And obviously, their hypocrisy has come in front of the public. General public, they know that it's actually Qasem Soleimani.
So there is a hypocrisy basically behind this.
That's number one. Number two is obviously this media is in the hands
because
of
a terrorist like the president of the American regime.
Yeah,
they're allowed to be on Twitter. They're allowed to tweet how much they want. They're allowed to have Facebook and Instagram, but a person like Sheikh Soleimani is not.
Is not, and it shows clearly that this media is in their hands. And they're using this for, obviously, they're using all the data that is over there. You know, when they can delete a picture,
it's very
a statement,
right,
or anything that you mentioned about Qasem Soleimani, if they can delete that, it means that they are saving all the data that is on the Facebook, on the Twitter, by those people who have their accounts, and there's no privacy. It's all in the hands of CIA, maybe FBI, maybe other intelligence agencies. Maybe in the hands of Israel as well.
For sure.
So all these things, like for our listeners, that if you think that you're on the Facebook or Twitter or maybe WhatsApp or I don't know, other means, they all are sharing your data. I know it's end-to-end encrypted, they say. It is end-to-end encrypted.
Right.
But it is for our general public, for people who are like on the low level of IT or working. But for these intelligence companies, for example, the one who has created
this
software.
There is no encryption there.
Who has created this software, yes, there is no encryption for him. Because he knows how to decrypt all these things.
Right.
So basically, these are the tools that they have injected into the society and they want people to get more into use. You know, there was a joke, I've seen a message like about the Google as well. The person in the future, he wanted to order a pizza. Google asked him, you can order this pizza. He said, how you know I like this? He said, because in the couple of times before you have ordered this, I have all your data. Mm. And then he said, it's better to order this one.
Right.
He said, why? Because you have cholesterol, for example.
Right.
And so everything's in the hands of Google in today's world. So we need to be very much careful. And this is very much clear that if Twitter or if the Facebook or if other channels or medias, if they are deleting the caption or the pictures or the things about Qasem Soleimani, Sheikh Qasem Soleimani, or other people like him, it means that these are the means of the enemies through which they are collecting data for themselves.
Right. Thank you very much, Sayyid.
Jazakallah
khairan. And thank you, dear listeners, for joining us in this program of questions and answers on Islamic belief.
إن في الجنة نهر اللبن إن في الجنة نهر اللبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن إن في الجنة نهرا من لبن لعلي وحسين وحسن لعلي وحسين وحسن حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا حب أهل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لنا شميحا
IRIB English Radio